Mr. Grange, thank you for joining us this morning. We had to rearrange the schedule, which means we rearranged your schedule, and we greatly appreciate you doing this for us. I'll just ask you the first question. I know Masai Ujiri is under contract with this organization, but if the Knicks want him and he decides he wants to go, what would the Raptors do? What would MLSE do?
Well, I think they'd enforce the contract. I mean, I wrote about this a year ago when the Phil stuff was sort of beginning to unravel. And, you know, there was talk at that point of him wanting to get back to L.A. and all of that. And James Dolan has admired Masai Ujiri for some time, basically because he keeps fleecing him in deals. If you go back to the Carmelo Anthony trade, then the Andrea Bargnani trade.
Right.
And, you know, keep in mind that it was that kind of anxiety about Masai Ujiri's magical powers that encouraged Dolan to nix the a deal that was in place for Kyle Lowry. So the relationship has been there for a while in terms of the respect factor. And when it started appearing that, as I said, the Phil Jackson situation in New York was unraveling, Masai Ujiri's name was floated then mm-hmm. as a potential replacement, and the horizon was around this summer or next summer, depending on what happened with Jackson's deal. That prompted MLSE, and I wrote about this last April. I said, if MLSE is smart, they're going to get in front of this and re-up and extend in advance of Ujiri's contract expiring and give him a significant term, significant money. That happened last summer, very, very quietly. I think on a Friday afternoon, I believe it was like the middle of August or July, like well after all the frenzy stuff died down. And, you know, I don't have the exact details on the term or the money, but keep in mind that Phil Jackson was making $12 million in New York. So if the object of you getting out ahead of a situation exactly like this, you know, I'm pretty sure Masai Ujiri made out very well on that deal. So, mm-hmm. so long answer. I mean, if, you know, I can't imagine Ujiri being a guy who's just going to stamp his feet and demand to be let out of a deal. It would just shock me. I think there's a lot of unfinished business to be done here, and he's been treated very well. So I'm not sure that as much as James Dolan might want to snap his fingers and make this happen, that he's got the means to do it.
I know we can't put ourselves in the Raptors' heads here, into the collective heads or MLSE's heads, but would there be a price for would there be a price for Masai for letting Masai Ujiri out of his contract? Would draft picks, perhaps?
How about Kristaps Porzingis?
Yeah.
I mean that's to me.
No, I'm serious.
I stress.
Yes.
I've never once got any kind of sense that Masai Ujiri is anything but happy here and determined to see the job through. Doesn't mean he's going to be here for a little. But just a second, letting someone out of the car here.
Oh, okay.
But if somehow in some fantastic world it came to that, I can't imagine what kind of compensation the Raptors would quite justifiably be mm-hmm. seeking to allow that to happen.
And that is your point. I mean, it is there's a contract in place. There's the old line in baseball, right? You never stand in the way of somebody wanting to move on. But when you have a contract like this in place, and it's pretty clear, I would imagine the Raptors would demand a lot in compensation. Now, the question, Mike, are the Knicks stupid enough to do that? I mean, with all due respect to Masai Ujiri, as good as Masai Ujiri is, I don't know if I'd give up a great player to get a great general manager.
I agree. And here's another point about, you know, about this kind of stuff is in leagues like the NHL and leagues like the NBA, where the salary cap is stiff mm-hmm. and immutable, these legacy franchises aren't, you don't have any particular advantage in resurrecting them.
Right.
And so as we've seen with the Leafs, you know, you just had to suffer through a rebuild. It's gone better than everyone thought, but you had to kind of drag along the bottom of the league and rebuild the same way the Columbus Blue Jackets would.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly in the NBA, as we've seen with the LA Lakers the last bunch of years, there's no magic formula you can engage that makes your rebuild any easier than any others, except that once you do reach a certain critical mass, in theory, you might have an advantage attracting that key free agent. And we've yet to see if that's actually going to be the case in New York, in LA. And it really hasn't been the case in New York. So I think, you know, nobody's smarter than Ujiri in understanding that. So it's not like you can go there and wave, you know, snap your fingers a couple of times and all of a sudden you're on your road to an NBA final.
Right. I mean, unlike the New York Yankees, you're playing with a finite salary cap. Your salary cap is Milwaukee's. Now, what you want to do with it is up to you, but your salary cap is Milwaukee's salary cap, and it doesn't matter whether your owner's 10 times as wealthy. There's a limited amount. There's a limited amount that you can do in order to get it done.
Right. I mean, of course, with the NBA, once you get to a certain stage of competitiveness, then you have advantages in retaining your players and going well over the cap and paying all those taxes. And a team like the Knicks, I mean, obviously there's going to be no limit. But I'm not convinced there'd be a significant limit here in Toronto either. Anyway, all that said, you know, I think the real critical thing to understand here is the Raptors got out, MLSC, I should say, got out in advance of this. They did re-up and extend Ujiri's existing contract in anticipation of him being recognized and approached by other teams. And, so short of something really dramatic, really dramatic happening, I don't see it being all that likely that Ujiri goes anywhere.
You've also wrote recently about Kyle Lowry and his free agent odyssey, if you want to call it a free agent odyssey. Where do you see that? How do you see that playing out? Because, Mike, I think a lot of us, I don't know how you feel. I still think this is the best place for Kyle Lowry. I think Kyle Lowry, in a lot of ways, is the best match for these guys. But, you know, you keep hearing, I mean, it's pretty clear that teams like Houston, Minnesota are looking around, at least, to doing something with their backcourt. My question, though, is does Kyle... If the money's going to be the same or a little better in Toronto, is Kyle any closer to winning a ring if that's the thing that drives him in Houston than he is in Toronto? I'm not certain about that. You're chasing Golden State instead of Cleveland. I don't see any edge there.
Yeah, I mean it's basically any team you're on that's not Golden State.
Yeah,
I think it's an uphill battle. And I mean, as one person who knows Kyle pretty well said, you know, when he made the comment at the end of the year saying, I want to win a ring, you know, he never said when he wanted to win a ring, right?
And that's with true.
So, so I think, and believe me, I do not disparage Kyle Lowry one little bit when I say this. As a 31-year-old point guard who I think, in his mind and probably justifiably, has been underpaid for a good chunk of the best years of his career. I'm sure his priority is going to be getting the best deal he can.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's here or somewhere else. But I think the challenge, first of all, as I wrote in that piece today, last night, a couple of things are in play. I mean, there is a sense out in the league that Lowry is available, which is to say that he is not, giving the Raptors any stronger consideration then he might another really good offer from another good spot. And this, in contrast, say, to DeMar DeRozan a year ago, who was widely thought to be kind of sealed for the Raptors as long as the deal was there. So I think there is a case here where the Raptors are going to have to make the best offer. And the challenge becomes, there's a couple of challenges, you know, with teams like, in particular, San Antonio and Houston, which provide good opportunities to win. And obviously there's the state income tax factor. So, you know, on a four-year deal, the Raptors really don't have a financial hammer if it really comes to that. And so the question becomes, you know, do they want to go to a fifth year? Do they want to kind of pay him over 4 years like they might over a fifth? In other words, do they want to spend, how much do they want to spend on Kyle Lowry? And then it's almost like a game of poker as to what exactly the hour he might be able to get outside in the open market. And there's a range. I mean, I talked to some pretty heavy hitting agents the last few days, and you know, I've heard as low as 3 years and 75 in Toronto, maybe with the team option, partially guaranteed for a fourth. And I've heard there's teams out there who are determined to give him $30 million a year over 3 or 4 years. So, you know, I don't think there's any hard and fast consensus on where that's all going to end up.
Mike, just moving back to the Knicks for a little bit, and actually this is what I planned in talking to you about this morning when we originally drew up the schedule. Why did it go so wrong for Phil Jackson? Did in New York, have we misread him? Does this say anything about his legacy with, you know, with his previous teams? Does it damage it in any way?
Not for me, other than maybe, first of all, I was not of the mind that he would be a smashing success as a celebrity executive in the first place.
And why is that?
Back to what we were talking about
right
at the beginning, okay. There's a kind of a formula to get better, and being able to say I'm Phil Jackson and wave a bunch of rings is kind of like the smallest ingredient in that formula. And the rookie GM, the league is getting increasingly complex all the time in terms of what it takes to build teams. So I didn't see he'd have any particular advantage there. Does it affect his legacy in any way? No. I mean, he is a fantastic coach who has taken teams with superb talent and in some cases not superb talent. If you go way back to his CBA days and his championships there, to win. And he's managed to earn the trust of the best players who've ever played this game. So that, I think, pretty much says all you need to know about him as a coach. Does it damage his legacy? Only in the sense of, I don't, from the outside looking in, not knowing all the detail, it doesn't look like he's approached that whole opportunity with a ton of integrity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's hard to know exactly. And I don't mean that, I guess, you know, I think he's kind of approached that opportunity as a way to make a ton of cash. And, you know, how committed he was to the actual cause of winning and rolling up his sleeves to build a winning team once the going proved more difficult than he might have anticipated. I'm not sure he passes that test. But keep in mind, he's working with James Dolan, and you know, we've never heard anything but chaos when his name comes up. So it's probably hard to render judgment there.